Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi everyone, Marcel here. Before today's episode, I want to tell you about a new show that we are loving at Witch Please Productions, the Culture Study Podcast with Anne Helen Peterson. If you don't already know it, I'm convinced that you're about to fall in love with a new podcast. And this is coming from me, Marcel, someone who famously doesn't really listen to podcasts. Culture Study is a podcast about exploring the nooks and crannies of the culture that surrounds us. Each week, Anne and a super smart co-host will answer listeners' questions about the stuff they find interesting and perplexing. Like, why do clothes suck now? And is Paw Patrol propaganda, or is it not that deep? And like, what's the deal with everyone I know getting a divorce? Just like Anne's tremendously popular newsletter of the same name, Culture Study Podcast is funny, insightful, and kind of weird. And it's guaranteed to help you become the most interesting person at parties. Listen to the Culture Study Podcast every Wednesday, wherever you get your shows. Who knows? Maybe you'll recognize some guests in the coming months.
Hello, listeners. Coach here. As a reminder, Witch Please Productions is on spring break, so we don't have a new episode of Material Girls for you this week. That said, we figured there's no time like the present to reintroduce you to Gender Playground, a podcast co-hosted by Marcel Cosman and Rami Marks about the joys of gender-affirming care for kids. This podcast launched on our Patreon last year, and through patron support, we were able to launch it to the public in February of this year. What you're about to hear is episode 5, Plans, Trans, and Autonomy. And yes, Marcel is justifiably really proud of that title. Take a listen and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes come out every other Thursday. Otherwise, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new Material Girls episode.
I've always been a bit reluctant to describe my daughter Billy as trans. She let us know at such a young age that she was a girl that she never really, quote unquote, lived her life as a boy, whatever that means. So I was never really sure whether trans was an accurate way to describe her gender, or even if she would self-identify as trans if given the choice. So when our provincial government recently unveiled its fascist plan to drastically reduce access to gender-affirming care, I had to talk with Billy about what these policies mean and why they will affect her in the years to come. I found myself explaining to her that she is trans and what that means. I have to say, that conversation went beautifully. I have never met anyone so self-assured and secure in who they are. We've always talked about gender as having room for any kind of body and any kind of expression. So it's not like she was surprised to learn that girls can have vulvas, or even that most girls have vulvas. What I found myself explaining to her was that the word trans might describe someone who stops expressing themselves one way and starts expressing themselves another, but that it also refers to the way that we change in response to new information. So in Billy's case, she always knew she was a girl, but we, her family and friends, had to shift our assumptions and expectations once we learned that we had assumed incorrectly. In other words, Billy is a trans girl because we, her community, respect her autonomy and trust her to know herself. Gender is a lived experience, not limited to vocabulary. I don't know how Billy will think about herself or talk about her gender as she gets older, but I trust her to make those decisions. My job as her mom is to make sure that I use all the tools at my disposal to affirm who she is, and that includes being mindful of the broader cultural and political significance of language. Thanks for letting me share that. I'm Marcel Cosman, and you are listening to Gender Playground. everybody. Welcome. You're listening to a podcast dedicated to the joys of gender-affirming care for kids. Please say hello to my incredible co-host, longtime friend, and absolute gem of a human, Raimi Marks. Hi, Raimi.
Hello, Marcel, also a gem of a human. If you are joining us today, we assume you want to do right by the kids in your life, even when the world makes it tricky. And you know what makes it really tricky to do right by kids? When our political and community leaders are fear-mongering and spreading misinformation about what it even means to be trans. So today, we are talking about transition and transitioning. This is the first of a series of episodes devoted to transition. We'll start broad today and get into some more specifics in following episodes.
So, Raimi, I feel like right off the top, we've got to talk about what we even mean when we say transition, right? I think it encompasses a lot of things.
Absolutely. So I think when anyone says the word transition, there's often this implication that we're talking about moving from one fixed point to another fixed point. But I think really transition is about a process, right? And so if we're talking about gender transition or transitioning as a human being, that's a process of continuously becoming oneself in new circumstances or as you gather more information about who you are.
I think that is such a helpful way to explain transition. I feel like probably this will resonate with a lot of listeners. There is so much misinformation out there about transition being incredibly front-end loaded, right? Like you decide that transition is right for you. So all of a sudden you're booking appointments for your top surgery. You're booking appointments to change your passport. You are telling everybody in the universe that everything that they've ever said about you is wrong. Like the way that transition tends to get represented in the media is so like, you're going to make all these life-altering decisions immediately. And that just doesn't really seem accurate.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the part where I think it's just not accurate for most people and their process and in what it's like to, you know, be a person and have to check all these boxes. That's also just so much. That's asking so much of people and assuming that, you know, anyone could just like do all these things and then suddenly be a different person. So I think a couple things that you mentioned in there. One is this sort of misconception that transition always means something medical or something physical, something very, again, definitive. And that might be a part of someone's transition process. It also doesn't have to be or, you know, might not be. The other thing you said, that sort of idea of the front loading, as though out of nowhere, someone suddenly realizes, ah, I'm trans and I will do the things and then I will be done and I will be trans. Exactly. Right. Like, as we've talked about in other episodes, people are always learning and growing and adjusting. And that both means that the ways that someone or the steps someone takes to transition might change or develop over time. It also might depend on, you know, other circumstances changing over time. So, you know, one example that's coming to my mind immediately is about my own top surgery experience. It was, you know, something that I had been thinking about off and on for a number of years. And every time I revisited the idea, I sort of came to the conclusion, you know, I don't really feel urgently about that. You know, I feel so comfortable with my body and it would be really cool if I just like had Velcro body parts that I could take on and off, but that is not what surgery is. And so for a long time, I just kept landing on the idea that that wasn't something I wanted or needed because I wasn't 100% there. And over time, due to a number of changing circumstances, just including understanding myself better and, you know, figuring out how I like to present myself in the world physically and in a very like logistical sense, having chronic pain and realizing that not having to wear a bra and have extra weight on my body, on my chest in particular, was probably going to feel really good for my back. So at some point, all of those factors added up and it felt right. And it felt like the thing I wanted to do, right? And that doesn't mean that all those years before that I was wrong or hadn't yet transitioned. Just this was one step in my process that didn't fit those earlier stages of my life.
There's so much that we have to talk about, but I really want to just, I want to jump in right now with a question for you, because I know there's so much anxiety represented in the media about regretting medical change. And so as somebody who is willing to talk about having top surgery, are there, I gotta know, are there ever days when you're like, oh man, I wish I hadn't done that?
Nope. Okay. That's an easy answer for me. There are absolutely, you know, days or times or factors that I'm, you know, wish were a little different or had gone a little differently, but I have not a single time since having surgery in 2017, not once have I thought, I wish I didn't do that. And again, right, that's my own experience. I cannot speak on behalf of every trans or non-binary person. And what I can actually say, a brand new transgender survey just came out, the U.S. Transgender Survey. It was almost 100,000 participants.
That's statistically significant.
It is quite significant. And some of the very initial results are out. And what it looks like is that of everyone who participated in the survey, 94% of people who have in some way lived their life, or who are in some way living as a gender different than the one they were assigned at birth. So people who have transitioned in some way, 94% of them reported they were either a lot more satisfied or a little more satisfied with their life.
That's a net gain. Even a little more satisfied, that's a net gain.
Yes. Of the people who, of the remaining percentage, 3% were a little or a lot less satisfied. So absolutely, some people,
sure,
maybe it's not feeling right for them. The majority of us, it's working out pretty well.
Yeah, it sounds like allowing people to make decisions about their body, their bodily autonomy, tends to be good.
It does.
Okay, so I'm so glad that you brought up this survey, and I'm so glad that you phrased it, I'm so glad that you referred to the way that folks can take really any steps to affirm their gender, right? Because, and we touched on this a little bit, but let's get into it in more detail, because transition is not limited to medical changes. There are all kinds of different ways that folks transition, that folks affirm their genders, and that we as their like loved ones and community members can affirm their gender. So can you talk to me about some of these different categories? What are they?
Yeah. So first, I just want to say, I love how you said that, Marcel, that like, it's about affirming one's gender, right? When I'm talking about transition or transitioning, I'm talking about taking any steps to affirm one's gender or, you know, community affirming someone's gender. So, you know, you asked about some of those categories, and depending on who you talk to, where you look, you might see things categorized in sort of some different ways. And I think, you know, there some of them might overlap, but broadly speaking, I'm going to talk about four-ish categories: internal, social, legal, and physical. So that first one, internal, you know, I at least often have not heard folks talk as much about that piece. I think it often falls under the umbrella of social, right? That you decide what your new name and pronouns are and tell people to use those. But I really, I see those as potentially different parts of the process, right? So someone can, quote unquote, transition. In other words, someone can affirm their gender identity by literally acknowledging it to themselves.
Of course. Acceptance.
Yeah. And self-acceptance.
Oh my gosh. Self-acceptance. Right. That's huge.
So huge. right? And that internal peace to some degree has to be happening for those other pieces to fall into place. So I think that's one step, is just how people think about themselves, how, you know, the language they use for themselves, even in their own head, the ways that they envision or conceptualize their own gender. I think that that change can be part of transition.
And I feel like that's really important, because this is the piece that, like, fear mongers will describe as confusion, right? And I feel like self-acceptance is quite the opposite of confusion.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't know that we're going to get very far with these fear mongers, but absolutely, there might be confusion, right? Someone might not know for sure, but to me, that sounds like the human experience.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I don't know. Again, I am a therapist. I talk to a lot of people. It is confusing to be a person.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah.
So again, even if someone's in a state of uncertainty or of working through, mm-hmm. that doesn't make it less real or valid.
Okay. Okay. I'm glad you said that. So from self-acceptance, we might then move into the social?
Yes. So social is, again, I think, like you were starting to allude to in your opening story, social is the ways that we show up in the world and interact with others. So that might be, you know, asking people to use a different name or pronouns or different language for referring to us, or it could be using different language for oneself when interacting with others, right? It could be things like the way that you dress or present yourself, your behavior, the communities you involve yourself in, a lot of things that I think you and I have talked about previously. And the other part of social transition is what you were talking about in your story. It's how your community, how your loved ones hopefully show up for you.
Yeah, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about that in the opening segment is I think I had been worried previously about imposing a label on Billy that didn't make sense to her, and coming to realize that transition is as much about me and the way that I change my assumptions, I change my language, I change, you know, whatever I need to in order to respond affirmatively and lovingly to my child. Like that's where the label transition is really important. Whether Billy thinks of herself as trans or not is totally secondary to the way that trans operates as a kind of social construct, not unlike gender.
Oh, how interesting.
Oh my gosh, shock.
What? And I so appreciate that nuance that you're holding, Marcel, right? That you can validate and you can follow Billy's lead, right? In whatever language she does or doesn't use for herself, however she conceptualizes herself, you can affirm and validate that. And you also are aware of the ways that gender and especially transgender identities and transitioning, like the ways that that can be conceptualized societally and how that can affect and impact people. And right, holding that for Billy a little bit, right? So knowing that this may not be a word or concept that is meaningful to her personally and still impacts her. And so how can you do that work alongside her?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. So Remy, then what about, like, where do we make the shift from social stuff to legal stuff, right? Because I feel like legal is a kind of extension of the social.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I think in a lot of ways, legal is just social, right? The law doesn't make anything more real. It's just a bunch of things that we technically have agreed to. I don't know. But here's where this is where my partner Stephanie is coming out, who is a lawyer and loves to say that the law is just a bunch of like made up things that we theoretically agreed to.
Sounds right to me.
It does. So absolutely, legal is sort of a piece of social,
mm-hmm.
right? And it tends to be where the administrative aspects can come in,
mm-hmm.
right? So the way that we have a bunch of documents with names and gender markers, right? Like if your birth certificate says an M or an F,
mm-hmm.
that for whatever bizarre reason can determine what services you can get or whether or not someone decides that, yes, you are really the person listed on this document.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of papers, the paperwork, the administrative documentation, the administrative constructs and categories can actually really impact someone's access, someone's mobility,
mm-hmm.
right? Like whether or not you can travel, whether or not you can drive, what bathroom someone's going to let you use.
Mm-hmm.
Though that piece also can be social
mm-hmm.
without the legal piece. But some people might find it really important for, again, you know, self-affirmation, for validation, or for logistical purposes and safety purposes, to try to amend some of those documents and other administrative markers to more accurately reflect current identity.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. We live in a very organized society. In spite of how total chaos
how
reigns
chaotic.
All the time, it is extremely difficult to do anything without having documentation to prove who you are. You know, you want to open a bank account. If you spell your name even a little bit differently than what appears on your birth certificate, you have to show up with a number of pieces of identification to prove that you are who you are. And so it makes a lot of sense to me that moving from social into legal is important and is an aspect of transition that I see it both bringing up a lot of challenges, but being able to get that legal affirmation, resolving a lot of those challenges at the same time.
And again, right, like this can be things including birth certificates, driver's license, health insurance, medical records, bank information, credit card information. Also just like for whatever reason, every one of the millions of online accounts we all have
now.
Oh
my God, yeah.
Right? Like the magnitude of how far this can reach is quite impressive. And often we really do not notice until suddenly you're maybe trying to update all of your documentation to match.
So the last category that you identified, Raimi, is the physical. And I feel like talking about things like hormonal transition, surgical transition, those are really big conversations that we'll probably talk about later. And they're probably also the things that come to mind immediately for cis folks who hear about transition in the media. But I feel like there are quite a few other kinds of physical ways that folks affirm their gender. And so I think it might be worth talking about those at the top.
Yeah, I really appreciate you framing it that way, because I agree that I think these conversations often get really lost in topic or in discussion around whether or not puberty blockers, hormones, surgeries are safe, okay, et cetera, et cetera. And even putting a pin in that, that is actually a pretty small percentage, I would say, of the ways that people transition and affirm their gender. And some other things that are some other steps or options that some people might take in that category are, you know, other aesthetic procedures. And so that could be, you know, electrolysis, right? Hair removal. It's not a surgery, but it's a physical procedure,
right?
Or voice training, literally just taking lessons to learn how to adjust the pitch and the tone of your voice to, again, present a certain way. And basically all the things that cis people can also do to affirm their own gender or sense of self, right? So cosmetic mm-hmm. procedures, hair removal or growth, mm-hmm. how we speak, posture, like posture training, right? These are all things that like any person can do to feel good in their body and who they are and how they present to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a small example, but like I didn't shave. I didn't remove any of my body hair for like close to a decade in my 20s and close to my early 30s. And the reason why I started again is because I didn't feel good when I went out in public, and I had to like overcome a lot of internalized like confusion and shame about like accepting that it was okay for me that it didn't make me a bad feminist to want to take the hair off my legs, you know, that yeah. like, yeah, there might, sure. Yeah. The patriarchy, but also like, I just didn't want to have hair on my legs. And that coming to realize that that was like a way of affirming my gender was, and that that was okay was, you know, it was complicated. And absolutely nobody questioned my right to make that decision because I am a cis woman. And when cis people do gender affirming stuff, it's just stuff. We don't call it gender affirming. We just call it stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Something else that you just mentioned there that I think is a really helpful point is the way that it was a choice that you got to make for yourself.
Yes.
Right. That just in the same way, there is no one way to be a woman or a cis woman at that. There are certain kinds of assumptions, right? So there are these expectations that women shave, or if you are a feminist, that you don't. But like, these are just assumptions and expectations and tropes that you're not actually beholden to them in this necessarily, right? And so in the same way, there is no one way to be trans or to transition. It's about making decisions about what feels right for you.
Rami, I have a kind of basic question for you that I think a lot of our listeners may be wondering about, but maybe don't totally know if they're allowed to ask it. Why would one choose to transition? Like, as you said in the previous segment, there are so many ways to be a woman, for example. If you're assigned female at birth, but you prefer to present very masculine, why not just be a tomboy instead of, say, identifying as non-binary and using they, them, or neo pronouns?
So I really appreciate you asking this question on behalf of our listeners, both because I think there's something really useful here and because I agree that maybe it's not always the most thoughtful question to ask someone who is not sitting down specifically to talk about this. So in answer to the question, you know, I think my first short answer is, well, why not just be a tomboy instead? Well, yeah, if you are, then be that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the same way that you, Marcel, could just not shave your legs, but you are because it's what felt right for you.
Yeah. I mean, not today, but like.
Exactly. So the why, mm-hmm. why would someone transition or take these steps to affirm their gender is because it's the steps that feel important, that feel good, that feel right, that speak to that person. And so, you know, I think often when I hear people talking about transitioning, it's it's often framed as a solution or maybe a cure for gender dysphoria, right? Well, so you must feel bad in your body. So you now need to fix these things or change these things so that you can feel good in your body. And absolutely, for some people, it might, all of these, any steps that they take might be related to addressing decreasing dysphoria, as we've talked about in previous episodes. Someone might also transition to increase gender euphoria, right? Not just to get away from negative feelings, but to actively seek out affirming, validating, positive, joyful experiences with oneself and as oneself. You know, someone might take some of these steps as a way to, you know, again, find some internal coherence, right? Saying like, okay, I feel this way. I would now like the language about me or this part of my body to feel like it matches my own conceptualization. And or some of these steps might feel meaningful for more external legibility, right? So, you know, someone might say, I would like to start using they, them pronouns, not necessarily because like they, them pronouns make me feel so warm and happy and excited, but because it's a very clear marker to everyone else that I am in some way, shape or form, not a man or a woman, right? That feels helpful. I would like people to perceive this more clearly about me.
I remember having during lockdown when we were all reacquainting ourselves with our loved ones via Zoom, I remember having a conversation with a friend whose pronouns had changed from she, her to she, they, and being like, oh my goodness, are you doing she, they pronouns? Is that like something that I should be aware of? And this friend saying like, yeah, I started to think about they, and it started to feel like really good. Like it, like, I'm trying to remember exactly how they phrased it, but it was something to the effect of, it was a way of thinking about themselves that felt positive and that allowed them to feel about themselves a kind of levity and a kind of lightness that they hadn't experienced before. And they're like, I don't know if everybody feels that way. And I was like, absolutely, everybody does not. Everybody does not feel that way. And so hearing you talk about, you know, this distinction between, you know, sure, yeah, decreasing dysphoria, but also more importantly, increasing euphoria. Like, yeah, that's real. Like that internal coherence and external legibility in something as simple as having your pronouns accurately reflecting what feels good about yourself. Like that's huge. This is also reminding me, Raimi, of transition not being linear, right? So, you know, my question initially, like, why transition? Why not just be X or Y or Z? Sorry, C. For all of our American listeners.
I was happy to let it go.
That even that question sort of presumes that, you know, the idea of transition is like, well, now I am this person who I wasn't before. And what you are saying is that transition is an ongoing process, just like anybody's, you know, coming to terms with who they are, coming to know themselves, who they are, is an ongoing process. So the question that I asked you is in itself kind of a faulty question, right? Like, why transition? Well, we're all becoming ourselves all the time. Transition is just the term that we use socially to describe people who are making changes that adjust, you know, key aspects of their identity that we think of. I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm saying anymore.
No, I agree. I think you're right. Like the term, the concept transition or transitioning, especially when it's around gender, is a particular way of naming a very human experience. Mm-hmm. In the realm of gender and our social understanding and expectations around gender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you also just mentioned in there, and I, I'm glad that you pointed it out, the idea that it's not always linear, right? It might be linear insofar as our lives are, right? Like one day comes after the next. Yeah. And again, if we're thinking about the way that all people are always becoming themselves, that is happening over time. But what that looks like and the specific steps or aspects don't have to happen in any particular order. They don't have to be related to others. So, you know, again, when we were talking about those different categories of transition, internal, social, legal, and physical, someone might only ever, quote unquote, transition internally. And that might be enough. Like that might be the transition and that counts, right? Someone might decide that, well, I don't want to get surgery or do this other thing until I've more socially transitioned and shared this with friends and family. Someone else might have the reverse feeling, right? And for someone else, they might not be related at all. And all of those different, those four categories, as well as all the different options in those categories, you know, it's sort of like a menu. And each person gets to choose which things sound good at whatever moment.
Oh, and it's like dim sum.
It's like dim sum. Exactly, right? And so someone might sort of pick and choose, like, these are the parts that sound good to me, that sound deliciously affirming. and there is no, like, if you're only trans or you've only transitioned once you've checked off enough boxes, unless, again, for a particular individual, that feels true.
Right. Right. Rainey, I think that you did you always do such a beautiful job of articulating why transition is positive and meaningful. I think it would be great for us to take this positive energy into tackling some myths and misconceptions about transition, just to, you know, round things out. Why it is that transition has such a bad reputation.
I love that. So, you know, I think we've already touched on two of those big ones, that transition is not necessarily only medical. It does not have to include any kind of medical or even physical steps. And in fact, some of those steps, especially like the things, the medical, physical, and legal categories, are not necessarily accessible to everyone, right? So someone might actually find those particular aspects affirming or validating or important and might not be able to access them, or at least not now, whether it's for financial reasons or political reasons or, you know, familial reasons, right? Like, there's a lot happening there. And again, even if someone's not able to, you know, take all of the steps that they might want to or that would feel meaningful for them, that still doesn't mean that they haven't engaged in transitioning or that they aren't transitioning or can't. And it's really important to acknowledge the ways that some of these things are deeply kept. Another myth that I think, you know, again, we've already talked a little bit about is that transitioning does not have to be related to dysphoria specifically, or in response to trying to fix dysphoria. It might be and it might not be.
So you don't have to hate yourself in order to want to change. Is that?
Yeah. In fact, I think often, and here's the therapist in me coming out again, I think often the fastest or clearest path through to change is actually loving yourself, right? It's saying that you deserve to change, that it's okay to change, that you get to change. And I think really following through on that can be such a beautiful way of showing self-love. And then, you know, again, and I think we've talked about these last two points, I can't help but say them anyway. Mm-hmm. Not all steps or any of the steps we've talked about are required or make someone more or less trans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A person is the gender that that person claims, right? So if someone says, I am a woman, that person is a woman, regardless of what steps or ways of showing that to the world. And finally, there's no end point. Just like, you know, people being themselves don't have, well, don't have an end point until the big one. Right? We are always becoming ourselves.
So, Rainey, what I hear you saying is that gender is never a fixed point, not for anybody, not for a person who is trans, not for a person who is cis. We are always changing. And what we need in order to feel affirmed and validated in our bodies and as ourselves may depend on the day. And that, especially for folks who are maybe feeling resistant or afraid of the idea of transition, what might be really helpful to remember is that nothing about who we are as humans is fixed. We are always changing. We're always coming to understand ourselves in new and different ways. New information helps us to understand why we feel certain ways about, you know, I don't know, fabric or our jobs or like the temperature outside. Like everything about being a human in the world is confusing and involves responding and thinking and processing. And so why it is that we decided that gender would be the fixed point is a bit silly. And it's okay to be open. It's okay as community members, as loved ones of folks who are thinking through who they are in terms of gender. It's okay to be open to those changes.
So, Marcel, I know, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. And as you said at the outset, there's a lot more here, right? We're just skimming the surface. So, you know, I think it might be helpful if we could even just name for our listeners some of what we did not get to today and where we might be able to expand this moving forward.
Absolutely. So for folks who are curious, we are definitely going to talk in greater detail down the road about things like passing, about medical transition, and about detransition, that very hot topic that fearmongers love to introduce as the reason why no one should be allowed to transition ever.
Hmm. I'm laughing so I don't cry.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
We want to make it easier for you to help the kids in your life to be themselves and to see themselves represented lovingly in the world. So this is the part of the episode when we share some things that make the world a more loving place for kids. This week, I want to tell you about some resources from a fabulous person named Rebecca Miner, the gender specialist. On her website, genderspecialist.com, she has a section on protecting trans youth. In particular, a number of resources for advocating, for signing petitions, for learning more, for sharing messages of support, taking action. And it's just a really, I think, a nice collection of a number of different easy ways to feel like you can stay engaged and informed in these here dark times. So that's genderspecialist.com/protect-trans-youth.
And this week, I want to tell you about this incredible YA novel that I had the pleasure of listening to on audiobook. I would highly recommend it on audiobook. I'm sure it's good on paperbook too. It is by, It is by author Akweke Emezi, and it's called Pet. So in the novel Pet, our main character is a Black trans girl who is loved and supported by her family and her community. So that aspect of her identity is never once called into question or problematized. And she gets to go on this incredible sort of horror light adventure with a monster that emerges from one of her mother's paintings. And it is a little bit, yeah, I would say horror light. It's fantastical. It is exciting. It is community minded. And again, the most important factor in how awesome this book is that this main character is never in danger herself and gets to be herself while going on this incredible adventure.
If you, our listeners, have a queer and trans inclusive recommendation for us, we want to hear it. Send us an email at genderplaygroundpod@gmail.com.
Wake up time. Do you think you know what you need to know? Make up time. Do you think you know?
Gender Playground is a team effort. Team players include Rami Marks, Hannah Rehack, Reese Carr, Hannah McGregor, and me, Marcel Cosman. Our theme song is called Shout It Out by Gabrielle Papillon, which you can find on her album Shout. This episode was sound engineered by Malika Kampenka. Gender Playground is produced by Witch Please Productions, distributed through Acast, and supported by you. That's right, you. Become a sponsor of Gender Playground today by heading to owitchplease.ca/sponsorships. You can submit a request to sponsor an episode for the price of $250. That gets you an in-episode shout-out and a pre-recorded ad that runs on the show for 2 weeks. You can opt in or out of taking advantage of those tools and simply sponsor an episode just because it means something to you. To follow all our work at Witch Please Productions, head to owitchplease.ca. Or follow us on Instagram at owitchplease. We're also on Substack at owitchplease.substack.com. And there we release a monthly newsletter and behind the episode deep dives for our show Material Girls. Otherwise, we'll be back in 2 weeks. See you next time on the playground.
Pull me out, I give in. I wanna scream about it. Shout it out, I'm all in.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.